Johnny's got a problem and he's out of control. Johnny's got a problem and he's out of control now. Johnny's got a problem and he's out of control. Johnny's got a problem, he's out of control. Johnny's got a problem and he's out of control. Got static on the brain, out of control now. Johnny's got a problem and he's out of control. Got static on the brain.
Side three is called George, which stands for George Hurley, who drew the longest straw.
And then there's You Need the Glory, as if the Minutemen knew they had constructed the perfect song with History Lesson Part 2, as if they knew there was no topping it and they needed to squish together a mass of jumbled mumblings and drum stuff. And then whistling, it is the ultimate palate cleanser by the time it's over. You've forgotten about the first half of the album and you're ready to move on. I actually didn't realize this was the first track of the second album because I've only had the CD version. That's pretty funny. That makes me like the song more.
Whenever I listen to this album, I spend most of my time looking at Raymond Pettibone's art in the gatefold. Ah, it's nice to say gatefold again. Anyway, years ago my friend Ellen was working at the Drawing Center in Soho in Manhattan. Pettibone was having an opening and she invited me to come. It was amazing. His work is amazing. SST and the Minutemen, not to mention Black Flag of course, wouldn't be the same without him. Like Peter Saville was to Factory, Raymond Pettibone was to SST. Anyway, there he was, in the flesh. I didn't say anything to him, partly because I'm kind of a dork in situations like that, and partly because the only thing I wanted to say to him was, I feel lightheaded. I feel good. But the best part of the evening was that, in addition to me, my friend Ellen, Raymond Pettibone, and 100 or so other people, John Waters was at the opening, too, in a three-piece pinstripe suit. I don't remember what Pettibone was wearing, or what I was wearing for that matter, but Waters was wearing that suit. It was a nice fucking suit. Damn, he looked good.
We've got ourselves in a world of language. Speaking before you act, acting before you think, speaking as reaction, and reaction to words. The internet is the first to go, and we get caught somewhere in between story and life, repeating and living, making a new history with an acute relationship and infinite access to the old history. Being younger than the original album, I didn't get this song, Mr. Robot's Holy Orders, when I first heard it. I had a replication of a made for CD reissue, and I found out later a handful of songs weren't there. Is this version less complete? A different story? In the overwhelming amount of songs, are a few really important? I hunted it down and put it into my listening, which is preferable, this idea of a more complete album, finer track listing. And this song is nearly twice as long as most of the others, but with a third of the words. It's in three parts, the instrumental, for the words, and the instrumental afterwards. Words as commandments, orders, covenants, turning points. Before, songs a guitar solo and a methodical beat working together and building. And after, a harsher math through the bass and drum, the guitar grating. It scares me a little, this song. The words is a kind of brutal code where I'm not sure if I'm the one commanding or being commanded.
First tour before the Berlin Wall fell, they were invited by Black Flag to travel with them to Europe. 10 musicians in one van, This is how they saw the places and people Boone and Watt had thought they would have only read about in their many cherished history books. It may seem a strange and simple statement, but reading about a culture and its sites fails in comparison to experiencing it oneself. And the lyrics of this song talk of such things. How do you explain the color red to a person who cannot see? Or explain the smell of a van smoldering with the stench of 10 unbathed, sweaty Californians to one who has never smelt? And what about the phrase, "You smelt it, you dealt it"? Is that universal? Boone was influenced to write this song, West Germany, when he saw the words, "I laugh at you, Yankee," spray-painted on the Berlin Wall. I chose to write about this song because it reminded me of the time that I was in West Berlin, the year the wall had fallen. I was standing in the town center. A construction crew was tearing down a huge statue of Lenin that dominated the square. Then, instantaneously, as people mostly oblivious traveled the grounds, a 5-story-tall metal crane replaced the bronze statue with an even larger, more colorful statue. A towering figure of Michael Jackson, moonwalking while drinking a bottle of Coca-Cola. Was this new monumental figure an example of the only political song Michael Jackson was willing to sing? The Politics of Time, written by Mike Watt, which includes the phrase "We Jam Econo," which became the title of the documentary based on the Minutemen that premiered in 2005. To take place of this song, I had the honor of talking to Dirk Vandenberg, who runs a guitar store called Guitar Safari in San Pedro, California. He is a lifelong friend of Mike Watt, George Hurley, and Dee Boone. He was also the photographer of the art in Double Nickels on the Dime. Here is Dirk Vandenberg.
The cover, which Mike informed me that you were in the back seat taking the photo.
That's right.
Did he approach you with the idea? What did Mike say to you?
It was basically his idea, and we had to do it like 2 days in a row, I think, just driving around in circles on the freeway. And he wanted a certain glint in his eye. He wanted the San Pedro sign and also get a shot of the speedometer. I had to get all these elements into the picture. And we gave the picture to SST, to Mugger. And what does he do? He cuts off the word San Pedro on the cover. After we got it nailed, he cuts it off. So I took all the other pictures on the back of Dee and George. And there's pictures inside that I took of Richard Meltzer and Joe Biza and all these weird people, I think, from that desert bus trip that we took. It was really fun. It was really good.
Did you take a lot of photos then, or were you consider yourself a photographer, or were you just a friend that had a camera?
Yeah, friend with a camera. Actually, I did take a lot of photos back then, but not on that level, you know, and I just got lucky to be in that place at that time. It was really fun.
You know, Mike talked about San Pedro a lot. It seems like he has a strong bond to the friends there and to the place itself.
Probably because I always consider San Pedro being like an island. I mean, you don't come here unless you live here. And so there's a pretty tight-knit bond with all the people, especially in the old days, you know, when a lot of music was happening and everything. We had Dancing Waters nightclub over here and stuff like that. It was just a real tight-knit deal, and now it's becoming like that again. Like, all these younger kids are coming up and they're doing all this stuff. They have a pretty pretty tight-knit community, too, so it's kind of like that again. But to me, it doesn't have the same soul that it used to have because I'm old.
Yeah, I know. I know. Me, someone getting old too. It's hard to separate out what is truly at heart and what is just being old.
Well, the good thing is for me is that I have a guitar shop, and I meet all kinds of younger players and stuff now, and they're all really good people, and so I feel sort of like I'm part of that community too. That's good.
Do the kids know the history?
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, they do. That's still a big, like, heartbeat of this place, and I don't think it'll ever change.
This song sounds weathered. Give it a wash and hang it out to dry on the line, next to the laundry, on a hot day, under the sun while the men are out working the fields for some below minimum wage, broken back of a job. And all the men who learned to hate him. Themselves seemed explicitly relevant last winter, when I was still trying to familiarize myself with this album as a gift, as a work of music. But then, while paying attention and generally feeling some social unrest in my world, I hear this song with words about the men who work the land and the powerful criminals who keep themselves hidden away. The fall and the winter were a cacophony of public shouts, calls, drumbeats, protests, and occupations demanding and making a change of who's in power where. So themselves sent a chill down my spine, the title like an answer to the question of who's got power, who hasn't. Themselves is a word that gives a kind of collective otherness. It's a group of selves, the same individuals. I considered it serendipity to have this album given to me then. Lies and promises that don't mean shit. Those are nothing new. And all the men who learn to hate
them. Just wake up and tug my hair. Let me know.
Please Don't Be Gentle With Me is a 45-second love song, co-written by Watt and Jack Brewer of Saccharine Trust, an ode to a sort of hardcore romance. Instead of waking up with a tender kiss, the narrator prefers a harsh yank of hair, so that they know there is no solace from the outside world, that brutal reality is ever present, and that by this waking reminder of pain, they will never be lulled into a false sense of comfort, and thus, paradoxically, will never be hurt.
Georgie's songs were kind of neat because he weren't so clear. This is actually the last go for Georgie. After this point, he never writes words again.
Why do you think that is?
He haven't picked any songs that he wrote, but there's a lot of songs on his side he wrote. Nothing Indeed. Direction West,
small snag and live. Did he want to be a writer?
Yeah, well, he would write these things at work very early when he started his shift, and so they'd be all spacey and... Me, it was a working guy writing songs at work. They were kind of work songs. Yeah. He didn't have the talent that Boone did for coalescing things, you know. Why didn't Georgie write anymore? Well, you know, Rimbaud only wrote a couple years. Some people, it's, you know, just a part of their life, you know. Other people, they have to keep doing it, yeah, till they die. Sometimes it gets better and better. Sometimes it's worse and worse. You know, it's weird about that kind of thing.
There is no cause. No cause at all for my hesitation, nothing Indeed.
When he wrote, was he just writing lyrics, or was he writing also like the guitar bass parts too?
I think he can play a little guitar now. I think he taught himself, so, but these days he just handed us pieces of paper. He didn't even have titles. And then we would spend a lot of time working on the music and working the drums in because we wanted more than just backbeat. It was D. Boone's idea to put political ideas in the way the Minutemen were put together. He didn't want hierarchy so much like from the arena rock. He wanted more egalitarian distribution of the parts or the power. So had the bass come up, played very troubled guitar so it wouldn't dominate or Bogart. We brought Georgie in with a lot of fills and stuff. We worked on this stuff. Me and D. Boone, it was very easy because we learned to play together. So he'd just start playing the other guy. You'd never had to teach songs. So where the most time was spent was with Georgie, who started playing with till after high school.
This track is called No Exchange, written by Mike Watt. I enjoyed my conversation with Dirk Vandenberg so thoroughly that I wanted to add a bit more. Here is him talking briefly about how he met the Minutemen and about how it has affected his life.
It was probably in the late 70s, early 80s when I first met Mike. His girlfriend, Nanny, was my neighbor. And I don't know how this whole thing happened exactly, but he came to my house. We listened to John Coltrane all night and played chess. And it was very fun. You know, he was the first guy that I met. But it was a weird night, you know. He seemed like a very powerful personality to me at that time, you know, and kind of instructive and demanding. After that, we played a show at this place over here, and Dee Boone came marching up to the stage, and he's just like, "You're on our label now," you know, kind of a weird thing. It all happened very fast.
You know, those two were just so close, and I mean, not that George wasn't also, but it's kind of interesting. It seems like he sits on the outside, and he's also a drummer who was also, like, separated from them.
Yeah, George was mostly on the outside, didn't really get involved in stuff, and just kind of laughed at everything. I mean, he's an intense guy, for sure, you know, but he still is an intense guy. But there was a definite connection between Mike and Dee that was different than with George, I think. Although now, you know, Georgie and Mike are super close, and yeah, get along really well.
Did you see any kind of changes in their relationship? Because I know once they started going on the road, they had to be together all the time.
No, I don't think so. I you know, I was on tour with them for, like, what, 5.5 weeks for the Mercia Live tour. Those guys were best buddies, you know. I mean, sometimes things would happen, like anybody would get involved into something, you know, of an altercation when you're stuck in a van for 5.5 weeks. It's always going to happen. I can recount one story where we were staying at Henry Rollins' mother's condo in Washington. I remember, like, hearing this, like, ruckus going on in the kitchen because Dee Boone had, like, made himself an omelet. Henry's mom was like, "Take whatever you want, make whatever, you know, eat your food, do whatever you want." But Dee Boone took everything and ate it, the whole thing. And those guys were, like, standing in the kitchen, and I watched them kind of yelling at each other, and then next thing I know, they're, like, bumping chests like rams, you know, hitting their heads together. It was pretty funny. They were very intense together, but also super sweet to each other, and they're like history buffs, you know. Those guys are crazy. Smarter than anybody I've ever met. Those guys loved each other dearly. I know that.
How do others see me? I'm worried. Worried but feel guilty. The media robs and betrays us. No more lies. We are responsible.
My friend Doug and I have always shared a love of the Minutemen. Even if he ranks New Day Rising above Double Nickels on his list of albums from the 80s, go figure. The thing about this song is that when Dee Boone sings, he sounds just like Doug when Doug tries to sing. And Doug sings when he's in the car, reading signs as he goes by them. Give him a break, slow down when workers are present. Or, International Chicken is back. Anyway, that's what I think of when I hear this song. I feel bad about it, but there it is. I can't help myself.
The year after Double Nickels on the Dime was released was the year that I worked at Chuck E. Cheese's. When I got home from work, I used to put This Ain't No Picnic on my stereo, and I really feel like I understood it. I was, after all, making $3.15 an hour to stand on Business 190 in the hot sun in a rat costume outside of Fort Hood, Texas, where I would wave at cars to try to get them to come into Chuck E. Cheese's, and GIs would drive by and pick up trucks and throw empty beer bottles at me. But it was only last night that Bob told me that this song was really about D. Boone's racist boss, and so some of that self-righteous feeling now is a little bit diminished.
In high school, when I was learning to play bass, I first learned how to play a Black Flag song. And then I learned how to play Spillage.
Side four is called chaff, which means the dry bracts enclosing mature grains of wheat. It also means trivial or worthless matter.
Only through your work and prayers, and those of millions of others, can we hope to survive this perilous century and keep alive this experiment in liberty, this last best hope of man. I want you to know that this administration is motivated by a political philosophy that sees the greatness of America in you, her people, and in your families, churches, neighborhoods, communities. The institutions that foster and nourish values like concern for others and respect for the rule of law under God.
June and July 1984, the Minutemen release Double Nickels on the Dime. Dio releases The Last in Line. New Edition releases New Edition. Billy Squire releases Signs 1984. Focus on the Family's first international office opens in Canada. Alan Berg, a Denver radio talk show host, was shot to death outside his home. Two white supremacists of the Aryan Nations Church were arrested. John Pearson, high school student, gets his first job as a doorman at GCC Cinemas in Mount Prospect. Hollywood introduced its PG-13 rating. Russia, Cuba, Iran, and Libya boycotted the Olympics. In Germany, Robert Brown, a former American soldier, struck Nicola Steele and raped her, then strangled her to prevent her from reporting the rape. Singer-songwriter D. Boone of the Minutemen writes a song about his time as a member of CISPIS, committee in solidarity with people of El Salvador. American novelist Truman Capote dies in Johnny Carson's guest bedroom. NASA launches the U.S. space shuttle Discovery on its first mission.
Husker Du releases Zen Arcade.
Ronald Reagan is re-elected president for another 4-year term.
Jesus and Tequila. My Uncle Patrick, who introduced me to this album, who was so important to me growing up, who once set up a tent in his backyard for us to camp out and listen to Batman audio dramas that scared the crap out of me, who took me to so many concerts till I was old enough to go on my own, who taught me how to put foamy earplugs in, let them expand, drown out the deafening experience of live music. I don't see him a whole lot anymore. He divorced my aunt while I was in college and largely left my immediate family's life. I see him every now and again, send him a text whenever I'm drunk and listening to the Big Boys. To Big Boys. To the Big Boys. The band, Big Boys. I probably won't see him this Christmas, but I'll send him this podcast, and I hope he listens. Thank you.
June 16th is another song written by Mike Watt about his experience reading Ulysses. It is the date that the book supposedly takes place. Instead of playing here his response to that song in particular, I wanted to play this section of the interview, which was his response to me asking him, did he feel like he was in competition with himself, meaning from the Minutemen to Firehose to the Second Men to what he's doing in his life at this very moment. Here was his response.
Yeah, and definitely you don't want to do reruns. You don't want to be a caricature of yourself. You do want to somehow at least add the old man perspective or the middle-aged perspective and not try to be totally a crisis boy or a crisis man and I got to remake my youth and, you know, could add on some kind of perspective, some shading, some, bevels, the turd tower, the totem pole, like Georgie would call it. Totem pole, you know, that joke was if Georgie didn't take a dump before the gig, he felt like it was a totem pole inside him, you know, pounding away. You know, he's riding on his tailbone. And he also said that there was a double entendre thing because the faces on the totem pole, too, was like, you know. If you're too self-conscious, yeah, then you're going to be playing games and playing with the lint in your belly button. That's kind of silly. But to acknowledge that, yeah, you're the same bozo, you know, taking the ride, what do you call it, Matterhorn or Mr. Toad's Wild Ride or Dumbo's Cups, or I don't know, acknowledge that some of that's okay. It's like the D. Boone thing, think it out loud, unless you got Totals Alzheimer. I guess good things of Alzheimer's, you're always having new thoughts. And remember some of your old thoughts, you know. Is, you know, John, here's the scary thing the scariest thing is cynicism. Thinking that you've seen it all.
Right.
This is the one thing you have to guard against about being not getting killed. It's thinking you've seen it all and nobody can teach you anything. But the other thing is nostalgia and sentimentalism. And, you know, Potsy and Fonzie and this shit. Yeah. I remember when that series came out, my pop told me, you know, boy, those were not. to be honest about it, and for me, being a Minuteman, there was a great thing. God, I got to play with D. Boone, but I got to resist the thing of just hiding back there.
Hey, look, did the shingle come off the roof? I survived Superstorm Sandy in suburban New York. Power outage, lockdown, the yards, streets, and highways covered in nature's casualties. But really, it wasn't so bad where I was. At night, when it got dark, we just drank wine until I fell asleep and woke up the next morning with the sunlight to hear reports of where the damage was worse. I think the metaphor of the storm is exhausted. It's wiped itself out. Planet here and now is full to the brim of real storms, and I personally feel caught in the rain with thick skin and a thin coat. Stop asking me if it looks like rain. This is rain. It's here for all of us. I keep peeling away layers of my skin, hoping somebody will notice, but no one ever does. Every day I'm testing it to the limits of holding me together. I'm talking about this album that is 28 years old, 6 years my senior, because I guess we all keep listening to it. Got that list of albums that changed my life, but this one isn't on it. It's still new to me. It still stings of the boy who gave it to me and sings of feelings and politics that I hear in this time. It's a storm in my boombox. Four sides of an album like four walls of a house cobbled together and weathered. And eventually we are left picking up the soggy pieces of home infrastructure and asking if they're still strong. And here? They are. You tell me, it's always going to be like this.
What you making, man?
The name of this song is Martin's Story. It's on the chat side of the record, the leftover side, but I really love this song. It's musically like nothing else I'd ever heard before. It kind of almost puts you into a trance. And the lyrics were written by a man named Martin Tamborovich, who was a close friend of the Minutemen. He was their roadie. He was also their lead singer when they were called the Reactionaries. And I guess they gave a couple of these songs to their friends to write lyrics for because they wanted a different perspective, not just the perspective of the three individual songwriters in the band. I think it was a great experiment because the lyrics to this song are nothing like anything else on the rest of the record.
This Van Halen cover boils the original down to its essence. One verse and then nothing but hey, 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 heys. One of the admirable things about the Minutemen was that they were a hardcore band that weren't above doing covers of classic rock songs without the mocking tone of some of their peers or the tiresome dogma of punk being a reaction to this or that kind of music. After all, to borrow a Minutemen credo, punk is whatever we make it to be.
One foot on the brake and one on the gas, hey. Well, there's too much traffic I can't pass, no. So I tried my best illegal move, a big black and white come and crush my groove again. Go on and write me up for 125, post my face, wanted dead or alive, take my license, all that jive, I can't drive 55, oh, no, So I signed my name on number 24, hey. Yeah, the judge said, boy, just one more, I'm gonna throw your ass in the city joint. Looked me in the eye, said, you get my point? I said, yeah, oh yeah. Write me up for 125, post my face, wanted dead or alive, take my license, all that jive, I can't drive 55, oh yeah. I can't drive 55, When I drive that slow, you know it's hard to steer, and I can't get my car out of second gear. What used to take 2 hours now takes all day, huh? It took me 16 hours to get to L.A. Go on and write me up for 125, post my face, wanted dead or alive, take my license, and all that jive, I can't drive 55, no, 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 I can't drive 55, I can't drive 55, I can't drive, I can't drive 55, I can't drive 55.
Little Man with a Gun in His Hand, my favorite Minutemen song. It originally appeared on the EP Buzz or Howl Under the Influence of Heat, and only included on Double Nickels in the 1984 album. That's because the band didn't like this version, and they're right, the Buzz version is better. But since I didn't pick up that EP until years later, and have only owned the vinyl version of Double Nickels, I've always associated it with this record, and in fact can't imagine Double Nickels without it. Considering it's one of the greatest songs of all time, even an inferior Little Man is better than most. Written with Chuck Dukowski from Black Flag, it's the first Minutemen song to pass the 3-minute mark. According to various interviews, it's either about Duggar, the Black Flag roadie, and Nig Heist frontman, or existentialism. Here's what it's about for me. It's about the slow build and the beginning. It's about the 6 count and the 8 count. Then the 6 count and the 8 count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Slows down, the lyrics kick in, enigmatic enough so that they can be interpreted any number of ways, but evocative of some lost tenderness and mounting frustration. It's about all the things you couldn't have or see. Then the middle, a jazz-like meandering that never loses its intensity, a cough syrupy euphoria, high but not pleasant, and you have a feeling that there's going to be an ugly explosion any minute. Then it comes. Dee Boone reaches the chorus, quietly at first, but by the second, he and the band burst forth with uncontrollable rage and unspeakable violence. Every time there's a mass shooting, I'll never be able to not think of this song. As I write this, it's several days after the school shooting in Newtown, Connecticut. If there is a more accurate representation of the follies of putting a gun into the hand of a warped, deranged little man, I haven't heard it. It's most certainly not anywhere near what Dukowski and the Minutemen had in mind, but I'll never be able to separate it.
Little man.
End of side four. Side four of a double album. Goddamn, double albums were so fucking great. Not only did you get twice the music, you got more album art. CDs just don't cut it. The art's too small, and there's too much crap on them. And no thought to song order. Now there's a lost art. That side one closing song was always fantastic, as was the side two opener. Real motivation to flip the vinyl. I could go on. But I'll just admit that I almost never listen to side four of this record. Again, I feel bad about it. But there it is.
The state, the church, the plans, the ways, the dead, the mind, the cut, what's the verb behind it all? The do, the how, the why, the where, the when, the what, get these words.
Besides all of the photo work that Dirk Vandenberg did for the Minutemen on Double Nickels and a Dime, he also recorded the sound of Dee's, Mike's, and George's cars. The last track you will hear after this one, Love Dance, is the last track, the sound of Mike, Dee, and George's cars. Similarly, but entirely different from the longevity of a solid record, is the permanence of a solid friendship. But do not mistake solid with harmonious. The building of long friendships are formed from the clobbering of jagged facets, destroying each other with words and knowing looks. These are the friends that stare into our souls and know we are frightened, that we are lonely, that we are all too human. The relationships we bring from childhood into adulthood, long-term dedication, are the most complicated sort. They are forged from being around someone for reasons ranging from similar views on politics or music to harsh realities like, we had no other choice, who else would have hung out with us? Some friendships can easily carry the label friend. Other deeper relationships, it may seem petty to give it an utterance so simple as the word friend, as if the identity of this relationship is tucked deep within its unwillingness to be named. I wanted to end my interview with Mike Watt on a more lighthearted note, but those softer words did not formulate in my thoughts. Lighthearted was not a worthy ending for such a band, for such childhood friends and business partners as Watt and Boone. Just the sound of those names together sound like a Mark Twain short story or a James Joyce novel or a Walt Whitman poem. In December of 1985, the year I graduated from high school and for the first time beginning to think about what I was going to do with my life, Dee Boone, aged 27, died instantly in an automobile accident. I've also had some very influential friends that have passed away in my life, and often they come to me in my dreams or I find myself still talking to them. Do you find yourself still talking or dreaming about Boone?
Yeah, all the time. He never talks back, though, hardly. When I ask him stuff, he never talks back. But sometimes he's in the dreams, and he'll say things. It's usually confusing. I don't know why he's there. And it's usually at the beginning of a tour when once you get in a tour, every day becomes the event. And so you get caught up in it. But at the beginning of a tour, you think about all the shit that can go wrong. You're very insecure. And it seems he comes to me in those dreams. And it's always some kind of maddening riddle. Why the fuck is he here? Why is he doing what he's doing? I always think it's because for the same reason he doesn't answer me when I ask him stuff. He wants me to think about it. Go in your room and think about it. That way we're fucking paddling, you know. Okay. Can't help it. You know, sometimes something hits me and without even thinking about it, my first reaction, what would D. Boone say? What would he do? I can't help it.
I often do that with my friend Peter, and sometimes it actually, I'll find myself vocalizing it. Like, he becomes that sounding board.
Losing people is the hardest lesson I've had to learn in life. Very difficult. Very difficult. I don't think I can learn it all the way. Some kind of process. But try my hardest. Good for him.
Thank you for listening to Jughead's Basement. Make sure to check out the other shows on the TNH Network right here at TuesdayNightHoot.com.